Tech Talk Radio will come to an end as you know it on Monday, December the 3rd, 2012. The website, Twitter feeds and newsletters will continue, and there will be the occasional radio special from time to time on 3WBC in Melbourne and on this podcast feed. For the show to continue in its current form, we need sponsorship and advertising to fund it. If your organisation is in a position to help, now is the time to do this. Just contact us via the website. Meanwhile, this is episode 411 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, November the 19th, 2012.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
This is an exciting day in the history of the NBN.
Copyright.gov is down. FBI.gov is next to go.
The world is in trouble. There is no Wikipedia.
Who here has an iPhone? Who here has a BlackBerry? Who here uses Gmail? Well, you're all screwed.
So we'll be monitoring this very closely. No one will pay for these rights if they can't find a way to make money off them.
Copyright is such a big issue. Legislation as 2006 is already outdated by the new technologies.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. On the show today, VHA Australia continues to lose customers and money despite a heavy investment in networks and branding, with revenue for the second half of 2012 down 14.8% on the previous half. Google's fiber network goes live in Kansas. Torrent tracker The Pirate Bay has been hit with a DDoS attack from one of its own users. Also, Microsoft sold 4 million upgrades to its Windows 8 operating system in the 3 days following the system's launch. Strangely, Steven Sinofsky, the president of both Microsoft's Windows and Windows Live divisions, is leaving the company with immediate effect and with no reason given. Better offer? Or did he fall on his sword? And mega upload founder Kim.com, after being denied an African.ga domain, has found his way to New Zealand. Don't forget there's Adam's View from the Couch and the usual OzSpot gadget app and website of the week. First up, here's this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio News Desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, the Federal Opposition releases a cyber safety discussion paper. NBNCo responds to rollout criticism, the 7 network cuts costs, and Microsoft sacks its Windows 8 chief. Welcome to Tech Talk News. The Federal Opposition has called for input from children, their parents, and schools to assist in the formulation of a new cyber safety policy. A new discussion paper released last week includes a number of proposals, including the introduction of takedown orders for offensive material on social networks. Opposition leader Mr. Tony Abbott says the coalition also supports a new e-safety commissioner for children.
We do need a children's e-safety commissioner. It ought to be possible for this commissioner to ensure that there are takedown orders for cyberbullying material.
Mr. Abbott went on to say that the new discussion paper was about internet safety rather than internet censorship. But cyber safety expert Ms. Susan McLean said that takedown notices already existed and were useless where content was hosted outside of Australia. Here's Susan McLean on ABC Radio last week.
One thing that I was a little bit concerned about was the comments about forcing social media sites to remove content that may not have been illegal but was just offensive and abusing. That's already in place, and I'm not sure why that was actually raised.
Mr. Abbott said the coalition's discussion paper would assist in formulating the opposition's official policy on online safety for children. Communications Minister Senator Stephen Conroy welcomed the coalition's discussion paper, but said much of it was simply a copy of long-held government policies. Chief Executive Officer of the NBN Construction Authority has responded to criticism that rollout of the high-speed network is taking too long. Mr. Mike Quigley last week said the rollout of the NBN is being ramped up and more than 700,000 households are expected to be connected by Christmas. Here's Mr. Quigley on the ABC's PM program last week.
It's a massive project, biggest infrastructure project ever undertaken in Australia. Of course, it takes some time to get this project going, but we really are now making good progress. We have commenced construction just between April and October of this year of as many premises as we've done up to that date of April. So we really are now starting to hit our straps.
Mr. Quigley went on to describe the NBN as a very valuable piece of infrastructure which will last for decades and decades. Mr. Quigley was responding to political criticism from opposition communications spokesman Mr. Malcolm Turnbull, who said in October that Mr. Quigley's lack of experience in running a telco had contributed to the gold plating and excessive spending of NBN Co. Mr. Turnbull, however, was non-committal when asked what the Coalition's plans were should they come to power at the next election. Mr. Turnbull said the Coalition's policy for the NBN will be, in large part, dictated at the time by the contracts that NBN Co. has already been locked into. The comments also came after the chairman of the ACCC, Mr. Rod Sims, announced the release of its first public assessment of the regulatory challenges posed by the NBN. Mr. Sims said the ACCC was now seeking public feedback on the agreement before it was accepted, but anticipated a smoother regulatory ride than when Telstra functioned as a wholesaler and a retailer.
Telstra was both the provider of the monopoly infrastructure and a downstream retailer. So it was providing infrastructure to its downstream competitors, and that's what led to most of the tension. We don't have that with the NBN. The NBN is wholesale only. It's not a downstream retailer. So I would imagine this will be a lot smoother than we've had with Telstra.
Up-to-date information on the NBN's deployment can be found at nbnco.com.au. The outlook for the Australian television industry is bleak at best. In recent weeks, we've reported that the Nine Entertainment Group has just barely avoided being placed into administration, and that the Ten Network has announced redundancies for over 100 jobs in newsrooms around the country. Now, this week, Seven West Media says it will be forced to cut costs in order to remain profitable. Shareholders vented their anger at last week's annual general meeting because of recent share price performance described as dismal. Shareholders were also enraged by a $1.9 million severance package for former CEO Mr. David Leckie. Mr. Leckie resigned in June this year and was replaced by Mr. Don Volte. Speaking at the AGM last week, Mr. Volte said Seven West Media, which includes the Seven TV network, Yahoo 7 and the West Australian newspaper, was expecting a 19% fall in earnings before interest and tax to about $250 million in the December half. Mr. Volte said he would cut costs aggressively because advertising markets were expected to remain weak, but said he did not see an immediate need for further staff redundancies. Shares in Seven West Media rose to a high of $1.41 before closing at $1.29 after last week's AGM. And in a decision that's raised eyebrows at Microsoft, president of the Windows division, Mr. Steven Sinofsky, has been sacked just days after the international launch of the Windows 8 operating system. In a press release last week, Microsoft said that Mr. Sinofsky was being replaced immediately by existing Windows executive Ms. Julie Larson-Green, who will be promoted to lead all Windows software and hardware engineering. Ms. Larson-Green will work alongside Windows executive Ms. Tammy Rella, who retains her roles as Chief Financial Officer and Chief Marketing Officer, and will assume responsibility for the business of Windows, with both reporting directly to CEO Mr. Steve Ballmer. Industry analysts have described Mr. Sinofsky, who led Windows 7 to success, as a polarizing figure and difficult to work with. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
I like being ambidextrous when it comes to technology.
Hugh Graham explaining what bricking the phone means.
The start thing's on the right-hand side and the thingy bob.
Dr. Ron's sexy beast.
There you go. Well done.
I've kept other parts of the Sense experience, but I've replaced the launcher.
To the credit of the build, nice and solid.
I was giving this some thought during the week.
I must admit, I'm seriously thinking about Nexus 7.
Bill is absolutely right. I got it wrong.
I'm really enjoying choosing different stations to listen to from all parts of the world.
But
I've come to conclusions I like 7 inches.
No, I don't want to use SMS as my second level authentication. Give me a token.
Now, speaking of telephone calls,
despite the fact that this is technically illegal under Australian consumer laws, Graham Callaghan Common Sense Party.
I like that one.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. We had a full contingency of panellists in this evening, which is just dandy. Dr. Ron, how is Taswegee Land?
Taswegee Land was very, very nice. I'm holding a sign up here for you. This, I've got prompt cards this week.
Really?
Ooh. Yeah.
Oh, okay, good. Lena's in this evening. You haven't been here for a day or three.
I've missed 2 weeks.
Yeah?
I missed you guys.
Oh,
we missed you too.
Yay. Isn't that sweet?
But I'm back now.
That's good. Lovely to have you back. There's been so much happening in the game as well. We're just thinking, what's going on? We had to do our own games research.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. And Graham and I, well, we're having a bit of a slack night tonight. These two can take
Yeah, they can carry the load this can, week, can't they, after last week?
See you guys.
Well, sorry, I have a microphone in front of me on the desk tonight. So if you hear some funny funks and bangs, you'll know what it was. That was the first one. Anyway.
Funk is a good word.
Funk, isn't it? Mm. Speaking of good words, we're having a cluster huffk in here tonight.
That was one of mine, yes.
Yeah, it is one of yours.
It's a favourite.
Yeah. So you got some big news too, a cluster of it.
I do. Lots of news. Well, I haven't been here for 2 whole weeks, so there's lots to catch up on.
Oh, well. Mm. Yeah, it is indeed. Anyway, Dr. Ron, back to you. Tassie, what were you doing in Tassie? A bit hot for you up here, was it, in the mainland? You had to go south.
Look, it was lovely weather in Tasmania last week. It was really, really nice.
I'm going there shortly. I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, okay. We're about to switch parts.
Oh, I don't know. All parts.
All of you.
Yeah, all of us.
Okay.
Yeah, no, we're going on the boat.
Oh, righto, righto.
Yeah. Going to get seasick, throw up on the side.
All that good stuff.
Yeah.
You're taking the car.
Ah, yes.
There's a break-even point where it's cheaper to just fly over and rent a car. But I think if you're there for longer than...
There's four of us.
Yeah, if you're there for longer than about 4 or 5 days, I think it's cheaper to pop the car on the boat.
Yeah, well, we will be. That's good, 4 or 5 days.
Something like that.
Welcome to Tech Talk Travel.
Tech Talk Travel, Tech Talk Getaway.
That's great, isn't it? There's another thing for us to do after we finish this one.
I was in Launceston for the Breath of Fresh Air Film Festival, Boffa Film Festival, with my partner.
And was it?
It was lovely. It was really nice.
Any good flicks?
Yeah, lots and lots. There were some great ones.
These are indie, I take it?
Yes. Yeah, that's right. Mm. Yeah, and then we went down to Hobart and spent a few days in Hobart, which was very nice
down
as
the penal colony down there. Gee, that's hard to say.
Colony?
That's what I'm trying to say.
Colony?
I had enough with cluster things.
In Hobart, we also went to
the
Museum of Old and New Art, Mona. Which
told me you went to Mona.
It was fascinating. It was really, really good. Yeah, I'd highly recommend it.
I'm not
an arty sort of person that would ordinarily go to museums, but this was absolutely fascinating. We wandered around there for about 6 hours or something, and the time just flew.
Wow.
It's like built 3 stories down underground by this eccentric billionaire who said, I've got lots of money. He's a professional gambler. And he just says, I've just earned all this money and don't pay tax on
Did
it
he
because
have a little,
it's all winnings.
Little guy called Mini Him?
Mini Me.
Yeah. No.
And they just set up
$1 billion.
Set up this fantastic art gallery. So
sounds good.
Mm.
And that's in Hobart, is it?
It's in Hobart, yeah.
And that's called Mona.
Mona, Museum of Old and New Art.
All right, I'll check that out when I'm down there.
There's a really smelly machine.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. There's a smelly machine that's meant to be like the human digestive system.
It's not meant to, I've got to tell you. It does, and it does it very, very well.
Oh, dear.
Ugh.
They've got like stuff from
ancient
Egypt.
It's all right. People with children will be well aware of that smell.
Ancient Egypt, like all the way through to like very modern art.
Okay.
And certainly that one that Lena describes is a machine that replicates the human digestive system.
Mm. In all manner of speaking.
Yeah, and the man that's built it has done such an amazing job. He's researched it with gastroenterologists and scientists and dietitians and people and said, look, if I put this combination of food in here, what temperature does this thing have to be that simulates the large intestine? What temperature and what are the acids that I would normally find in this thing here, which is the stomach? And at the end of the machine...
And they've built this.
Everything comes out. Yeah, this man's built this as an art exhibit. It's fascinating.
So it's got ins and outs. Do you put stuff in the in?
Or no, it's like an art exhibit, so you stand back and watch.
Oh, you can't put your Maccas in and see what happens.
Oh.
No, but if you did that, probably 8 or 12 or 16 hours later, it would eventually work its way through.
Gross.
Two Crows Down wants to know if they've got an inkjet water cascade thingy. I don't know.
Yes, they do, and that is fascinating as well. It
sounds like fun technology. What's it about?
Yeah, really clever. It's called the... I'm trying to remember now off the top of my head. I'll think of it and I'll let you know. But it's like a waterfall that's made up of inkjet little printer heads that fire drops of water. Connected to the internet, so any word that's trending on the internet...
Did you put a picture up
online?
Yes, I did. I saw that. I was wondering what it was.
Yeah, it actually creates a waterfall...
Is that what that picture was?
...of words.
Ah.
Yeah, it's very, very clever.
Oh, okay. Ah.
Excellent.
I'll have to go back and have a look at that, but it's all back in your Twitter feed.
It is. It is in my Twitter feed, yeah. Absolutely, yeah, very, very clever indeed. Some clever people out there.
Might have to go down there one day. I've been to Tasmania a few times.
You go for the football.
The last few times, yeah, I've been to the football and Launceston, and that area around the Tamar Valley up there is just so beautiful and just such a fun place to visit. I haven't been down as far as Hobart yet.
So, plenty to do.
Yeah, looking forward to it. All right, lots to talk about tonight. I did a little trip up the bush over the weekend, and I'll talk to you about that coming up very shortly. But first,
your say on Tech Talk Radio.
Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is how to communicate with the panel for the next 2 weeks. Then that's it. What show is this, Andrew?
Third last.
Well done. He's not going to take the bait.
He's got a piece of paper here with a word on it. I can't read that. I need my glasses.
Too many syllables.
No, it's too big. It's blurry.
It is, in fact, the third last Tech Talk Radio ever.
Oh, my goodness.
It's the penultimate.
It is not.
No, it's not.
No. I printed out the word, ladies and gentlemen, so Andrew could read
it. He's still reading it wrong.
It's the antenna penultimate.
The antenna penultimate. That's exactly what it is. The aerial penultimate.
Hang on.
I don't need you to show me, Lena. I'm offended by the fact that you think I need to read it off the
page. I'll get it by the end of the night. I need some practice.
Well, pretend it's your name at the start, a nickname for your name. Andy penultimate.
How does that work?
The Andy penultimate.
The Andy penultimate.
I like that.
I can't quite get my head around calling Andrew Andy. Andy doesn't quite fit.
You don't
Andrew.
Look like an Andy.
He's not an Andy, no.
No. Hey, just in case you forgot the segment.
Oh, sorry.
Your say on Tech Talk Radio.
Gadget website, app and hotspot coming up.
Oh, you want that now, do you?
There is lots of correspondence. We'll work through it as quickly as we can, but it's all important and it's all pertinent. So let's have a look. Primal via the feedback address says...
Hello, Primal.
To Andrew and GC.
Yes, yes.
Well done on the show last week.
Thank you.
Despite being down on numbers and opinions to put forward, the show was up to the usual standard and very entertaining.
We had plenty of opinions between the two of us, I think.
It was good, wasn't it?
So it was up to the usual standard without me and without Lena.
Can no, I'm not sure that's quite right.
I think that's what he's saying.
It was a good show. I enjoyed it. We thought we'd have to play music, but we didn't. But that's what we normally do when we're down the numbers here. Oh, we've got plenty of music, but no, we never do.
My son was disappointed, though. He's met both Lena and Dr. Ron. Each week he runs around yelling, Lena and Dr. Ron are on the radio. But Monday he was looking at me perplexed, asking, where's Lena and Dr. Ron?
This is sounding nepotistic. Who's this person?
This is Primal. Primal says, re-Emica's telco issues last week.
Primal's in the chat.
And the excess data charges. Primal is in the chat, chat.techtalkradio.com.au if you're listening to us live. I ask, why is it that telcos can monitor real-time the phone call, text and data usage of prepaid customers that have a very real potential to burn them with funds they're unable to collect, and yet they delay on post-paid customers' usage tracking for anything up to 3 days, depending on your carrier? For reference, on Android, I recommend an app called My Usage by an Aussie developer who's got widgets for carriers, a lot of the ISPs, as well as useful things like flybys and frequent flyer accounts.
Ms. Foley,
yes.
Can you do the sound effect of a cash register?
Cha-ching!
That's the one.
Speaking of the carriers, what were they thinking when they made their decisions to not carry the Nexus 4 that was released yesterday, Tuesday morning last week, Australian time? There was it's not LTE, profits on low-cost phones are not high enough, the storage space is too small, and so on and so on. Look at the results.
Since when was the telco business about selling phones?
It's not about selling phones.
It never has been. No, low-cost phones have nothing to do with it.
Look at the results. Both the 8GB and 16GB sold out very quickly. The 16GB model sold out in less than 20 minutes. They made a bad choice, losing potentially thousands of contract customers.
Perhaps a little bit of arrogant not liking Google telling them what to do?
Maybe. Once I'm out of contract with my current provider, I will be going prepaid and likely staying there. Cheers, Primal. Thanks, Pry. Thanks for the feedback. Andrew, you had one of those apps.
Sorry, what? I wasn't listening.
No, that's okay.
I was out of the room there for a moment. You caught me with my...
I'll read it again. No, just... Primal says, well done on the show.
Yeah, got that bit. Oh. Hang on, do you want me to play the opener again?
Yeah, it'd be good. Yeah, okay. He says that he has an application that tracks everything, including like frequent fly points. And...
Yeah, I got one of those.
Yeah, what's the...
We talked about it. It's called Consume.
Consume. That the app last week?
It was.
Week?
Or the week before, one of the two. Consume, right. Great app.
Primal had a different one he was suggesting.
He
that
did.
Week. Called My Usage. My Usage.
And that's, so there's that's a couple an of Android one, I think it is, isn't it? Primal, you're in the chat. Speak up now. He's on delay. Give him 30 seconds.
chat room moderator and longtime friend of the panel, GD,
yep,
says via the feedback address, this is designed to track space junk, but the other problem of tracking Earth-crossing asteroids, Apollo asteroids, has been completely ignored. He's a bit angry, GD, here.
He's not in the chat tonight. He apologised.
He will be a little bit later down the track, he says. Rob McNaught's Siding Spring Survey has been denied funding and will finish in January next year, leaving the Southern Hemisphere completely unprotected. Not smart thinking, Oz. And he's got a link there to an ABC News item about the US military stationing a powerful radar and space telescope in Australia as part of a major refocusing of priorities towards Asia. The deal calls for the first deployment of a US Air Force C-band radar in the Southern Hemisphere, allowing Americans to better track space debris. But the existing tracking program that works and works well, GD says, is going to be no longer funded. Is this a big thing, Graham? Do we need to track space debris, or is it just a bit of a novelty eccentric sort of thing?
No, it's not a novelty eccentric sort of thing at all. It's an extremely important thing. The tiniest little bit of debris, a screwdriver, or even something as small as just a nut that's been dropped by someone working on a satellite, or the result of a satellite collision, or anything like that, and there's tons and tons, millions and millions of bits of it floating around up there. Because of the speeds they're travelling, if it collides with a working satellite, the working satellite can very quickly become a not working satellite. And that, of course, can be millions of dollars of expense and inconvenience in terms of communications not working. So, tracking space junk is not only important but essential to the way we live life these days with our reliance on satellite technology. And I think that GD is absolutely right. It's short-sighted. False economy, really. Australia is uniquely placed in the world because of our Southern Hemisphere position, being a developed country in the Southern Hemisphere with lots of empty land, lots of very quiet radio locations. One of a very small number of countries that can really provide great services to the spacefaring community around the world. And we don't have to build our own rockets and satellites to be a huge part of that, and to be an important part of that, and to be part of the economy that generates money and provides essential communication services to the world.
Yeah, so. Because our outback remote spaces are very radio quiet, aren't they?
Very friendly to these sorts of installations. Not to mention scientific endeavours such as radio telescopes and so on. We've seen the square kilometre array business being talked about a while back. If you have a look for SKA on the web, if you're not sure what I'm talking about there, it's absolutely essential, fundamental science research. And there's and people again, people are reluctant to fund that sort of stuff as well. And it's there's almost whenever you have a fundamental breakthrough in basic research, it always leads to amazing technologies, and all you've got to do is look at what's right in front of everyone listening to the show. I'm sure is a, and certainly everyone in here. We're four people. We've got five computers in front of us.
Absolutely.
All because of some crazy quantum effects that turned into a transistor.
GD, thank you for alerting us to that, and I'll trying to remember to put that link there in the show notes to the ABC News article. Michael, via direct email to Dr. Ron, says, I listened to the latest Tech Talk Radio podcast and heard the response to my last email, re-notification of upcoming podcasts and another listener having issues with his Telstra bill.
Yes.
Well, I've got a tongue-in-cheek rant about...
They're not related, by the way.
Oh, the podcast and the Telstra bill.
Yeah, correct.
Ah, they could be.
Oh, yeah.
Michael says he's got a tongue-in-cheek rant about a very small Optus bill, which keeps growing. I originally had a home phone account and a separate Optus cable account, which I use for working at home. Well, I knew I was leaving work. I decided to combine landline and cable into one account. I was told the cable account would be closed. It was actually closed 3 days later. And to make a short story long, you got an actual piece of paper, which was a bill for 39 cents. Payment processing fee plus GST adjustment was rounded to 40 cents. I thought rather than wasting my time on the phone, I'd just pay it.
And he copped another processing fee?
He did. The next month, what do I get but another bill showing my 40-cent payments, but including a $1.18 bill payment fee because I paid the bill.
Crikey.
Bringing the total amount asked for now with GST adjustments to $1.30. So I spent half an hour on the phone before I was able to speak to someone after I'd repeated comments like, no, you're not understanding what I'm telling you. I've paid the previous invoice in full. He finally told me he would provide a credit and close the account. I do also believe in Santa Claus, so...
Can I? Which company was this? They deserve an honourable mention.
This was Optus.
Yeah, I thought it might have been.
All just as bad. I've received invoices from Telstra for, like, 2 cents. A quick question. On a recent show where geo-blocking was discussed, there was mention of being able to get part one and part three of an e-book from Amazon.
Oh, yes.
But you had to circumvent geo-blocking to get part two.
Yeah.
I'm interested in the title and author of the book because I don't recollect it being mentioned on the show.
I don't know that I did mention it on the show.
Do you recall which one it was, Grant?
Isaac Asimov's original Foundation series.
Asimov's original Foundation
series. So I had the first one is Foundation. I got to the end of that and wanted the second one, but I could only get the third one.
Okay.
Isaac Asimov. Yeah.
Give that a go, Michael, if you're interested in Asimov. Long-time contributor, GJ, says via the feedback address, I usually enjoy your podcast.
Oh. Ow.
However.
My feelings.
I do not agree with...
You haven't heard me here lately.
Can we just say the however is in capital letters? All uppercase?
However is in capital letters.
Yes, yeah. Don't yell at us.
I do not agree with the views of last week's panel on cricket, live sport, and the downscaling approach of the major networks.
Oh, really? Uh-oh, we're in trouble.
Firstly...
Now.
You talked about sport.
Yeah, no. I spoke about sport.
I'm never not coming back in here again because I leave and you talk about sport. Goodness me. We've had emails saying don't talk about sport.
I complain most bitterly about the cricket not being in high definition on Channel 9 and Gem.
Right.
At the risk of alienating 99.9% of people, cricket is not a high definition sport. Cricket is is green, white, and a little red ball, and best viewed on a Minecraft emulator. It is also not
Who is this Philistine?
It is also not a sport. It is slow death. A way of watching your life drain away grain by grain by grain.
I'm with him on this.
The crowds at the cricket, the only real colour, even have to find ways to amuse themselves.
You're going to mock me. At least get your facts straight.
A high-definition sport is action, movement, surround, sound and colour. Real high-definition for me is Kingdom of Plants, anything by Attenborough, a good movie or a pretty face where the makeup hasn't been so badly done that they look like gingerbread. Then there is the sound. It is the use of the format, not abuse of the broadcast license, to the exclusion of those who can really make them sing. Regards and regrets on your imminent departure, GJ.
Speak your piece, GJ. Come on, don't hold back. Well done. I like it.
I agree with the things that he likes to watch on high definition. They're all things I like to watch on high definition as well. But I have to say he is a complete and utter Philistine in regard to his... views on cricket.
Oh, dear.
I'm with him on that, actually.
Is he in the chat? No, he's not.
Primal in the chat room says, tell that person you fired, get out of the gene pool.
Oh,
Primal. Oh,
harsh.
It's come to this, has it?
Death on someone over cricket?
Only 2.5 shows to go, and look everybody's turned on everybody
revolution
else.
In the chat room.
Honestly. Yeah.
Marky says, that is awesome. Ha, 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 ha,
ha, ha.
Michael, via the contact form, says, dear Tech Talkers... This is a little bit lengthy, but I'll speed through it. It's important. I'm writing in response to Andrew's issue with moving from the HTC Android to the iPhone 5.
Oh, this came on 2 pages. Yes, keep going.
First up, I'll say I'm not an Apple fanboy and don't own or have ever owned a Mac, and I only use them from time to time. However, I have owned an iPhone since the 3GS, so I admit favouritism on that front.
I got one of them. They're good. They still work, even with iOS 6.
Michael, about 4 months ago, changed from Optus to Telstra as his carrier. He got an HTC One XL. After 3 months of frustration and pain, he sold it on eBay to purchase a new iPhone 5 from Apple directly. He purchased the HTC from Telstra as he works for Telstra, and he wanted to try it out IRL and see what using Android was all about and didn't see the learning curve too big. I would like to express my reasons for going back to the iPhone. Pros for the HTC One XL. Android is pretty straightforward and flexible. 4.7-inch screen is nice. Loved the USB drag and drop. 4G Telstra is very, very quick. Hardware back button, as Graham said, is better. GPS is fantastic, but you've got to remember to turn it on and off because of the battery issues. against the HTC One XL. Battery is very bad. If you watch videos on it, and I don't even think you have to clarify that there, Michael. I think the battery is very bad, full stop. In fact, I'd go so far as to say it's appalling. It's a lovely phone, but the battery is appalling.
Can you swap it?
No.
Oh, so it's an Apple design. It's built in. You can't change it out.
I'm starting now to carry a mains charger, power pack with me.
Well, it's come to that, has it?
Yeah, it has come to that. Oh, it's really, really bad.
That's not good.
You take 10 or...
Graham, are you the same? Because you got
I have no troubles with mine at all, but I've got a car kit in the car and I spend a lot of time driving around, so it charges in between calls.
Yeah.
Michael goes on to say, there is no way to adjust the phone's sound volume through the headset or any other one available headset. Experienced unexplained large mobile downloads using 50% of my cap. That just might be the...
they all do that.
Yeah, it might be your plan, Michael. For some reason, the HTC Android engineers thought when you answer a call through your Bluetooth that you wouldn't want your phone to remain locked, which caused my pocket to start placing calls or hanging up while I was driving.
Oh, that's an oversight.
Do you have that problem? Do you have your pocket dial? No, you've got a case for yours. Maybe that's the solution.
What it does is when you're off-hook but on Bluetooth, so it only affects you if you've got it in your pocket while you're on a call.
Yeah.
And it unlocks it so that you can do things like press 5 for regicide. So, yep.
If you know the name of the king or queen being murdered.
That's right.
Press 5.
it depends on how you use the phone.
I'm going to miss this show.
Whether that affects you or not.
What happens when you press 6?
Does anybody know the reference that we're making here? Anyway,
well, the Springfield Police Department. If you know the name of the crime being committed,
exactly,
press 1.
Yeah.
Yes. Caller ID on such a big ass screen could not be smaller if they tried, and I couldn't find a way to increase it. Michael, I agree. +++. It's absurd. Having family all with iPhones, I could use Find My iPhone, or as we call it, the Stalker app. I knew I would have the app wherever I thought the web would work. Against the iPhone 5, Michael says, very expensive. Could do with better battery, however, it's at least 50% better than the HTC. And in favour of iPhone 5, iOS is a lot more integrated than Android is with the hardware. As they say, it just works well mostly, and he likes the camera. He thinks that's much better.
Yeah, the camera's great.
So as much as I did like the size of the phone, the flexibility of the OS, the iPhone 1, hands down. However, I don't really know how much these issues were HTC or Android, but I'm glad I at least gave it a go. Sorry to see you guys leaving. However, look forward to not too infrequent, I hope, specials next year. Cheers, Michael.
Thanks, Michael.
You tweeted that word. Sorry, I'm just looking at my Twitter feed.
I did.
I can work on it on the phone. I can see that.
Andrew Penultimate.
Anti-thingy-me, Bob.
That's it.
Yeah.
Last but certainly not least, Carl, via the contact form.
Definitely not last.
Says. Hi, team. After listening to Emika's letter last week, my initial reaction was the same as most, Telstra gouging a customer and failing to resolve it. However, with a little more time to think, I would say this may be a case of a customer passing responsibility onto someone else rather than accepting blame. If this was the first time he went away over the limit, he would certainly have a case. But as he says, it's happened a few times now, and by several hundred dollars. So surely any reasonable person would have a close look at what they're downloading or streaming, or switch to a bigger plan.
I don't like your use of reasonable person there.
See you at the final show.
Bit loaded.
Huh.
Sometimes we just can't find the cares to give. You just can't find them. You just go, okay, yep, just, I'll deal with it later. Doesn't mean you're not reasonable.
You've said that on Twitter recently, but you didn't use the word cares.
No, I didn't.
I've got one thing to add to Carl's feedback, and that is that I got my new phone a month ago now, and it had 100% data usage. It came with 100% data usage, which was good.
Yeah, but that's a benefit of the telco, isn't it? Not your usage habits.
I rang Telstra today, and I was on the phone to them for about 12 minutes. The gentleman I spoke to was extremely helpful.
You're talking to him again? Yep. Didn't they fix it the first time?
Well, the first bill came out.
Oh, you didn't get pinged, did you?
Yeah, it had like $48 extra data usage. No. And I said, I'm not going to be paying the $48. Can you fix that? He said, yes, I'm fixing it now as we speak. Only pay what the total is minus that $48 and there will be no issue. Is there anything else I can help you with? It's sorted. Would you like my employee number?
He offered.
Wow. He offered for your notes. I said, I would love your employee number. Thank you. And he gave it to me over the phone.
Did you start the conversation with, I'm Dr. Ron from the radio?
I did, actually. I said, don't you know who I am?
I threw around my clout the other day for the first time ever.
You threw clout? Who'd you throw it at?
I threw it at, I don't know if I should say that their establishment.
Maybe not.
It's an online shop
where
you can buy Kindles and things, but it's not Amazon.
Okay.
It's a different one. And I'm trying to get hold of a Kindle Paperwhite, a specific model that Amazon doesn't ship to Australia because, you know, I can't do anything the easy way. And... it's very hard to get. And I was asking, you know, is it possible to reserve one? And he said, no, it's first come, first serve. When we get them on, you'll get an email. And then, you know, you got to put it in your cart and get it. And then I said, well, I was really hoping to get one before the radio show finishes the end of the year. So I could talk about it. Is there any way you could reserve one for me?
It's he a said, slippery
no,
slope.
No, I cannot. And I was like, oh, okay.
Worth a try. Worth a try.
Yep, it was worth a shot. It's the only time in 2 years. I've been doing this for 2 years with you guys. It's the only time I've ever said that I worked on the radio.
One more piece of correspondence that needs to be tabled.
Go ahead.
Lena, this is for you.
What?
Says he, sharping, giving her a very sharp object.
It is a sharp object. It's a sharp pair of scissors.
This is from a listener, and I thought I'd put it on the bench there.
What?
Get into it.
It's what a parcel.
It's from the United States of America.
Oh, my goodness.
Is it ticking?
Who's it for?
Read the side of the box.
Lena is...
Team TV.
I know who that's from.
He's in the chat tonight.
That's from White Salmon.
Did he send us a present?
Lena is using a pair of scissors to slice open the box at the moment.
Which my career in retail said you should never, ever, ever do.
No, you'll stab somebody in a second any minute now,
Aside, Dr. Ron.
Occupational health and safety.
There. Happy snaps are coming out. They'll be on Twitter in a moment.
Yeah, I should have put makeup on.
Oh, dear.
For the radio.
Two sides on the third slice now.
This is thrilling radio.
The box is opening.
I see newspaper.
There's newspapers.
Oh, is that what he sent us?
Newspaper.
What does the newspaper? What's the headline on the newspaper?
Is there a card? I don't want to be rude.
I don't know.
What is all this?
Oscar Mike Golf.
I see a blue T-shirt.
You didn't have to do this, White Salmon.
There's
really
a card. There's a card.
I don't read all that. That's going for hours.
It's two pages. How sweet.
Whoa.
Oh, my goodness. Here, you go through the box and I'll skim the letter.
Going away present. Yeah, go through the box there, Dr.
Hello, Doctors Lena, Lyd, Andrew, Ron, Graham, Adam and Mark.
Covers it all.
Wow. First and foremost, thank you so very much for the tireless work the crew has put in over the last 8 years.
That's a T-shirt for Lena. I'd like to see you wear that tonight.
I can't fit.
It's from. Cool. It's literally from White Salmon.
Awesome.
Hey, cool.
On the back.
Yes, I've got a copy of the White Salmon local paper here that I'm going to read. So.
Oh. Yeah.
For the tireless work the crew has put in over the last 8 years to make my Monday something to look forward to.
Tuesdays, he said in the chat. It's about 1:25 in the morning over there.
It's always been Tuesdays for White Salmon.
Yeah.
I'm amazed at your passion and devotion to Tech Talk Radio and the tolerance of your spouses.
So are we, just quietly.
Yeah. I happened to stumble across your podcast around 6 years ago. I liked it so much, I downloaded it and listened to the back catalogue. And I have been listening to the program just as faithfully as you have produced them ever since. Aww.
That's nice.
You made me feel like an invited guest in a discussion among close friends, and I will miss you all greatly. My mind wanders sometimes, and I imagine that I have the time and resources to hop a quick flight to Melbourne at the beginning of December to shake all your hands for a job well done. Alas, this care package will have to suffice.
White Salmon, this is tremendous. Thank you so much. It is a care package.
Yeah.
We've got a coffee mug. We've got T-shirts. We've got
there's a cap.
A baseball cap.
Cool. So we have to fight over all these or what?
What does it say? So. The Dallas what?
The Dallas Fruit Company.
Cool.
You can have that.
Dr. Run likes caps.
He does. There we go. He collects them.
We'll have to go through that in the
break. Thank you, White Salmon. That's very kind of you.
Absolutely fantastic.
He's also written a really long letter about how much the show means to him, which is very sweet, him personally and all the things that he's loved about the show, which is really nice. I'm looking forward to reading that. We need to play music so I can read it.
That's very sweet. Thank you
so much.
Thanks, Alan. That's tremendous. It's really greatly appreciated.
Aw. Getting all verklempt now. It's real.
That's the Coro for the week, the third last Tech Talk Radio. We'll take a break and we'll be back with more and remove the sharp scissors from the studio after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Confirmed new iPad mini to debut in October.
That sounds a bit winfo.
Yes, this is good news.
You shouldn't be able to patent things that are either obvious or natural progressions from things that already exist.
Maybe it can loop through.
The red is Office, the green is Xbox.
It's going to make life harder rather than easier.
Well, now you've railroaded me.
Sorry.
On its face.
Whoa.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Just in case you missed something, want to hear a discussion again, or even if you wanted to indulge in the Tech Talk Radio extended mix, then subscribe to the Tech Talk Radio podcast. You'll find a link on the website, techtalkradio.com.au, or subscribe on iTunes. You can also have a repeat of the current show streamed live to your device by visiting stitcher.com or by visiting the Tech Talk Radio small screen site, m.techtalkradio.com.au. Tech Talk Radio. It's everywhere you need it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We've just been going through the loot here that White Salmon has sent us. That's why it's been quiet on the chat, because we've been too busy going, oh, wow, look at this. You can see a bit of the little box that came across on Twitter. We've just put a picture up there under the Tech Talk Radio feed, so you're going to have a look there. And, yeah, this is very nice. We've got coffee cups, we've got caps, we've got T-shirts, some coffee there. We're going to try some of the local coffee, which is going to be great. So thank you very much.
Some good loot.
Good loot.
Very good loot.
Indeed, indeed.
Thanks, White Salmon.
I especially like the
badges.
The badges.
Yeah, they're good.
What does he call them?
Me too.
Buttons or something he calls
them. Yeah, vote, your country needs you. Yes.
Yep.
The election ones, weren't they? The Obama ones?
Yeah, yeah. Fantastic. Very funny.
Yeah. Said, I think there was a note. I think I heard one of you guys say it was posted the day before the election.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of them says, think outside the fox.
Oh,
good, cool. Good advice.
Alrighty. During the course of the weekend that has just been, I took a trip up to a lovely part of central Victoria called Castlemaine.
You went to Malmesbury too, didn't
I did,
you?
But that's not important right now.
Okay. Move on.
Oh. I was playing with some technology along the way, which is probably more to the point of my trip to up that neck of the world. And over the course of the last little bit, Apple have turned on the maps for the iPhone-y thing, iPhone device, all that sort of stuff. So had a bit of a play with that. But before that, here's Adam's view from the couch.
Adam Turner's view from the couch.
Apple has finally made turn-by-turn navigation available to Australian users of Apple Maps, but as harsh as it sounds, near enough just isn't good enough. It really was amazing that Apple let a half-finished product like Apple Maps out of the door without at least dubbing it as a beta version as a disclaimer. It somewhat spoiled the launch of iOS 6 and the iPhone 5, although, to be honest, if it wasn't Apple Maps, then people would have found something else to complain about. Looking for something wrong with the latest gadget, Apple or otherwise, is one of the new blood sports of the internet. As Apple works hard to improve Apple Maps, last week Australians finally got a taste of its sat-nav features. The phones now issue turn-by-turn directions on the screen, read aloud in a Siri-style voice. Turn-by-turn navigation is only available on the iPhone 4S, iPhone 5, and iPad 2 or later with cellular data capability. If you're using an iPhone 4, then you're out of luck. It'll calculate routes and display turning information, but it won't update automatically if you drive. This is pretty harsh considering that it's clear the iPhone 4 is capable of handling a full sat-nav app. Now, there was a time when I considered spoken directions essential for a sat-nav app so you can keep your eyes on the road, but I've changed my mind. As long as you've got the phone up near eye level, it's actually better to just be looking at it rather than listening to the voice. Pictures of complicated intersections are easier to interpret than spoken instructions. It's much easier to get lost if you just listen to the phone. Having the phone constantly interrupting can also cause a certain level of tension during long family drives, especially when you're testing some new gadget but you're supposed to be relaxing on a family holiday. Tested on my iPhone 5 review unit on loan from Telstra, Apple's sat-nav features are Spartan but functional. You're given a choice of several routes with estimated travel times, but no way to edit those routes or add extra destinations. Once you're on the road, you get nice big green road sign style notifications of turns, and Siri's pronunciation is pretty good when it comes to street names. What I really like is that it's easy to see where you're going because unlike some sat-nav apps, Apple doesn't try to cram too much information and too many points of interest into the display. It just shows you what you need to see to get where you want to go. When you're weaving through the back streets, Apple Maps does a good job of explaining and displaying close turns. It copes well when you take a wrong turn, quickly and quietly recalculating. You've got no advanced on-screen information such as your current speed, but you can tap the screen to see your ETA. Now, I'm a regular user of the TomTom app, so one of my frustrations is that Apple Maps 3D view isn't as close to eye level as TomTom. I don't mean the stupid 3D view that try and shows you buildings and turns landscapes into 3D things. That looks terrible, but I don't even see why people bother complaining about that. It's such a stupid novelty thing, I don't see why anyone would want to use it. When I say 3D, I mean rather than looking straight down on the roads, tilting it so you see the road running away from you more realistically as if you were driving. Like I said, Apple Maps' view isn't tilted the same angle as TomTom, but it does grow on you after a while, especially as the taller iPhone 5 lets you see further into the distance, assuming you're using it in portrait mode rather than landscape mode. The phone can tell which direction you're facing and turns the view slightly to adjust, which is good and bad. If you're waiting at an intersection but the road on the other side veers off at an angle, on screen that road runs off the screen so you can't actually look ahead to see the next turn. The TomTom app also does a better job of indicating lane change and exits. I do like the fact that Apple Maps makes it easier to search for destinations by name when you don't have a street address, whereas TomTom's a bit too reliant on Facebook data. Then there's the accuracy of Apple Maps. So far, I haven't encountered any problems navigating the street-level maps. You hear plenty of horror stories, but from my experience, the problems with Apple Maps are more big picture than at street level. For example, many country towns are marked in the wrong location, but once you get down to street level, the roads are accurate. For example, if I ask Apple Maps to take me to Mildura, I'll end up in a national park more than 50 kilometres to the south. It even gets the name of the park wrong just to add insult to injury. But if I search for Walnut Avenue, Mildura, it takes me to the exact right spot in the town. Meanwhile, if I go to the TomTom app and say take me just to Mildura, it still gets me to the centre of town. It's like the maps are built out of different layers, one layer for the streets and another layer for the town names. Apple's street level maps aren't too bad, but the town name level is out, so it shows you as Mildura in the wrong spot, but when you want to see the individual streets, it's okay. This doesn't matter if you're just navigating around town and you know the exact location you want to go to down to the street name and number, but if you say, just take me to Mildura, just take me to Geelong, just take me to Newcastle, you can't trust it to actually know where they are. If you take a look at regional maps, many towns are in the wrong spot. Many of the towns along the Murray aren't anywhere near the river according to Apple Maps. It's just unacceptable for what's supposed to be a good mapping service. Now, the turn-by-turn features aren't too bad considering that it's free, but the more general inaccuracies in the map means it still rates a fail compared to something like TomTom or Navigon. If you've been using a paid app, you're very unlikely to abandon it for Apple Maps. Near enough just isn't good enough when it comes to satellite navigation, and there's a long road ahead before you can have complete faith in Apple Maps.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Now, where was I? I drove up to Malmesbury on the weekend, which is around about an hour and a half north of Melbourne, where we broadcast from. And it was quite timely that I actually heard Adam's... I was doing the post on Adam's little piece there before I took my drive. Now, I thought, oh, this is great. I'll give it a whirl and see what it was like. Now, I was suitably impressed. As Adam says, at street level, it was good. I punched in... Well, actually, I told Siri my destination, and Siri got it right the very first time, stuck a pin in it, and gave me a direction of travel with some alternates to choose whether I wanted to go with tollways or not or anything like that.
Right, and it knew where you were going?
It knew where I was going.
Didn't have you in the wrong state or...?
Well, to be quite honest, I had my HTC Desire all lined up, ready to rock and roll for navigation to use Google Maps.
Yeah, the navigation in that's quite good
too. It is quite good. So I've used both now, and I was quite suitably impressed with the Apple version of it. Now, Adam was saying that there isn't a lot of, like, your speed on the screen or anything like that. And I found that that was actually quite refreshing. It wasn't cluttered. All it would put on the screen is turn information and the passing streets as you went past them.
Yep.
Which, and it was quite big and bold. It looked quite good. And I think it functioned really well. It didn't fail at any particular point in time on the journey up, which was really good. And the thing that I was impressed with, Dr. Ron, is I think I mentioned to you on the telephone today when we were just having one of our ad hoc chats.
On the electric telephone?
Yeah, was the fact that here in Melbourne, we have these tunnel things like you have in Sydney and other major city centres around the country and potentially around the world. And where the Google app stops and just becomes a straight line because it loses satellite comms.
and then picks it up and when you come out of the tunnel.
The actual Apple apps just keeps on going. I don't know where it's getting its signal from, but it knew where it could tell you what you were going underneath and followed the road. Whether it used the force and tried to do a pre-calculation based on your speed before it lost its comms or what, I don't know. But I just noticed that and I thought, we're going under the Yarra River now. This is really cool. Let's go faster.
I wonder how it does that. Maybe it just knows that despite the fact that it's lost signal, it might extrapolate, you know, the direction you're travelling, the speed that you're travelling at, and work out where you probably
Pretty
are.
Pretty sure that's what it's doing.
Yeah.
My TomTom does exactly that.
Okay.
But if there's traffic and you stop unexpectedly, it continues going on.
Oh, well, see, I didn't do that in the tunnel. So
no, you wouldn't if you had a choice, would you?
No. So I thought that was quite good, and it got us to our destination without any worry in the world,
mm-hmm.
and it took a really good route. Well, probably the only route that it could take. So I was suitably impressed with it for my first time use by putting in a regional address and getting us there. Adam did say that if you go the next layer up and look down at more like at a town level and say, take me to a specific town, I think that's where the app seems to fall down because it tends to be very hit and miss with certain towns. Adam quoted Mildura in that view from the couch, and I must admit Elphinstone, which is one of the towns along the way, was nowhere to be seen unless you zoomed out, despite being in the middle of it. I was a long way from that particular town. But for all of its flaws, it worked.
Well, there's two different problems there, aren't there? There's the navigation, which is one thing, which you seem to be talking quite happily about, but the navigation relies on the maps, and if the maps aren't good, then the navigation's going to have that problem inherited. But it's not really a navigation problem.
Yeah, it's not at that low,
I mean.
Low level.
Yeah,
yeah, which is good. Anyway, there's some first-hand information about my experiences.
I've been trying the navigation on the HTC One XL and
Google Maps.
Google Maps, and it's been doing extremely well. I've got a TomTom, and I not all that long ago got a new TomTom to make sure I had the latest maps.
TomTom
sort of
is
stuff.
The commercial option, isn't it? Now they're
well, it's one of the commercial options.
Did you get the app, or did you have a physical TomTom?
I have a physical TomTom,
yeah,
which I really liked, and I did once try one of the other ones, the Navman or something like that, and did not like it one little bit because I was so used to the TomTom way of doing things. But I must admit that the One XL does a really good job. I just got a little bit fed up with it interrupting. I listen to podcasts in the car all the time rather than music. And I just got a little bit fed up with it pausing my podcast every few seconds to give me a road direction.
Whereas annoying.
Yeah. With the TomTom, it doesn't interrupt what's in my car speakers, so yep. I can just turn it down so I hear it, but it doesn't. But I can still hear what else is going on. So it's one of those cases where the phone and the podcasting and all that seems to go nicely together in the same unit because you want your podcast to pause when you get a phone call, but the navigation I quite like having in a separate unit. It's one of those ones where, yeah, some things go together in the same box and some things don't go together in the same box.
Do you like the sound? Do you like the turn-by-turn audible instructions, or are you a see-it-on-the-screen type sort of person?
No, I find the audible instruction because otherwise I'll be on autopilot. I'll just go for miles and forget to turn.
Really?
I hate them.
I agree. I'm with Lena on that one. I must admit, I'd much rather have visual
but
only.
You guys are a different situation because I'm almost always in the car on my own. So they're a lot less intrusive. If you're in the car with other people, they do get really intrusive, I agree.
Throw things at you.
Do you find you ever have a discrepancy, Graham, between the instructions that are being read to you and what you actually have to do and what's on the screen? That was one of the things that Adam was identifying there as being an issue with the Apple Maps and the turn-by-turn navigation.
Only at very unusual intersections. I did get one odd one where obviously it was the way the whoever drew the map had been drawn. It was telling me to go, you know, go left at the fork, which was in fact a like a keep left sign sort of situation.
Right.
But only once, really. I sort of understand how some people end up turning right onto the railway tracks.
If you blindly just listen to the directions.
And also because people listen to the directions and it says in 600 metres turn right, and then they turn right straight away. And I think that's how people end up on the railway tracks.
Because they hear turn right.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. I think that's probably what goes on quite a lot, and people got no idea how far 600 metres is.
I've got a Garmin Nuvi GPS unit.
I'm sorry.
It's a self-contained. No, don't be. It's a very good, very good unit. I like using it.
Oh, good.
It's a 1490 model. It's got a nice big screen. It's a couple of years old now. Sometimes there is a discrepancy between what it is speaking and what is actually displayed on the screen.
I don't get that so often.
I'll always go for what's on the screen because I just think the interpretation of the where you are and where you're travelling and what the map's saying and trying to verbalise that, it just sometimes it just doesn't quite get it right.
Unusual intersections in particular, yeah.
Yeah.
I find that the two different sources of information, sometimes the screen clarifies what the voice has said, and sometimes the voice can clarify what's on the screen. Sometimes it can work either way. The more information is better often.
How's the pronunciation on the Garmin movie?
Does it even read street names, or does it just say?
Or does it say turn left at the roundabout? No, take the third exit.
No, it does street names. Does text to speech is the street names?
Is it usually right?
Pretty good job.
Oh, good.
Usually
the TomTom has some extraordinary pronunciations for Melbourne locations,
especially
and
Middleborough Road.
Yeah. Really? Why was it?
Do you get Middleburg?
Middleborough.
Really?
Middleborough.
Who's
the
Android device? And I'm using the Google stuff that came because it came with two different apps for navigation. It came with a Navman one and a Google one. I use the Google one, and it gets the street names a lot better than and the location names a lot better than the TomTom did, but still gets the odd one, amusingly confused.
Have you got the John Cleese plug-in for the TomTom?
No.
You should.
I want the GLaDOS one.
Really?
GLaDOS. Some, yes, that would be nice. There's some great, I hadn't thought of that. That's a good one.
There's some really good plug-ins for voices.
She gives you the wrong directions.
We did. many years ago, we threatened to do a Tech Talk Radio one, but we never did.
Yeah. She gives you the wrong directions, the GLaDOS one.
Does she?
Yeah, because she wants you to die. Because it's Portal, so...
Of course. And does she then abuse you when you've turned the wrong way?
She does. She gets really mad at you. She's like, I saw that coming, idiot. Like she says things like that. Mm.
Do a U-turn when possible. Yeah. No, I'm not joking. Moron. Now. You really do need to do a U-turn.
Apparently the map is right, but what she's telling you is completely irrelevant.
That's great.
Yeah. That'd be entertaining for the family on the way on a long trip, wouldn't it?
That'd be the only time I'd listen to the speech part of it, I think, if it was funny.
One of the first times I used the TomTom in the car with Mum in the car, she got quite upset because there were times on the route where I thought I knew better where I was going than the TomTom did. Mm. And I decided, this says to turn right, and I know I'm going to go straight on because I want to get on the freeway or something like that. And Mum got quite upset. She said she'll get angry if you don't do what she says.
Primal was saying he had a voice with Yoda on it, and it was awesome. So I could just imagine that in the
left, you must.
Yes, I was just thinking Graham in the car. Well, the force is strong with this one.
The traffic is strong on this freeway.
His computer's off.
Dear. Anyway, the other thing, prelude to my sojourns up north, the LTE.
Are we still talking about that?
Yeah, LTE in regional Victoria. Well done, Telstra.
Oh,
it works
really?
Incredibly well in and around a lot of the big rural centres.
Is that right?
So much so that I was incredibly jealous and it would be worth the move to get 60 megabits per second down while sitting in a country town.
No, because your limit's only a couple of gig and you'd burn through it in a day.
And yes, you're absolutely right because... since being on the new plan, I'm burning through LTE. You just go through data at a ferocious
rate.
It's almost getting to the point now where I think I need to turn it off because and it's just for normal use. It's like because surfing is so much faster and because doing an update on an app or something like that is really big and you accidentally, you want to listen to a podcast, it chooses the best streaming rates you can get now.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
You do tend to burn through the data. And, of course, then if you do a tether and you turn the tethering on and all the kids in the car have got your hotspot password plugged into their iPods, boy, oh, boy, can you go through. I caught my daughter watching ABC iView on the car on the way up.
Oh, no.
Ouch.
Hey, no.
So you're single-handedly keeping Telstra in the black at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. That's I'm going to turn off my LTE for a while and fall back to 3G, I think.
Yeah. Hey, good work, Telstra. In Launceston and Hobart with 4G. Everywhere I went, I had at least two or three bars of 4G.
Superb.
Yep, they did a great job.
Excellent. Excellent.
That really bodes well for the rest of it because it's coming to everywhere else. It's coming to a lot of places where it isn't yet.
Yeah. All right. Something we haven't had for a while.
Tech Talk Games with Lena Van Deventer.
I'm back.
You are.
Yay.
Sup? What's been happening?
I have to sync that up later on with the recording, by the way. Wah-wah-wahs.
Don't. You feel free to point your finger at that woman and say that again because it's...
Yeah. I'll bite it off.
Sing along. Sing along for it and a bit out of tune now. Then you'll never be able to sync it up. Oh, no.
Have fun.
Done it now.
Have fun.
Yeah, have fun with that one.
You've only got three left, don't whinge.
Yeah.
It's not going to be my new thing that I do every week for 2 years.
Wii U.
The Wii U. The Wii U has been released.
Were they drunk when they named it?
Wii U.
Wii U.
You come here. It's been released in North America, and it's had let's put it this way. Here's a list of problems.
Oh, dear.
List, not just one, a list. The American release has seen a day one firmware update that's said to be, wait for it, 5 gig.
Whoa, Sony.
The firmware update's 5 gig.
The firmware update is 5 gig.
That's amazing, and I thought a Gran Turismo update of about 4 days and 3 hours of downloading was bad enough, but no, 5 gig, you wouldn't want to be on dial-up.
The thing with Gran Turismo and Sony is that every single time you launch the damn game, you have to download 5 gigs of updates.
I haven't launched it for a while, I'm not game.
No, well, I did the other day, and yet again, just as predicted.
The trick is to game often. Game early, game often, then your updates won't be so plentiful.
I'm still playing Plants vs. Zombies, thank you very
much. Yay!
There's so many little things in there to play.
There are. And you
does
can
this list have bullet points?
It does. It's
one of those lists.
It's one of those lists.
Okay.
So the update is 5 gig, according to Jeff Keighley of Game Trailers TV, who started telling Twitter all about it, because that's where you go when you want to complain about stuff. He went straight to Twitter and started complaining about how, judging by the time the progress bar had taken and the time it had to go, this was going to be a 4-hour download on his internet package, which is massive, especially if you're buying this for kids. You might not have a big, juicy internet plan like I do.
So you buy a brand new...
You wait in line
Wii
to buy
U off off the shelf.
Yep.
And you plug it in and turn it on, and the first thing it does is starts downloading 5 gigabytes of updates.
Yep.
Nintendo.
Very, very unfortunate. This update lets you access online features, transfer data from your Wii, and visit the Miiverse and other online features. So basically you're bringing home an unassembled bicycle, and depending on your internet connection speed, it could be 1 to 4 hours before that battle station's fully operational.
And it could cost you more than the actual device itself to do the upload.
It could, depending on your plan. 5 gig could take
a lot more than 4 hours, too.
It could. Expect this story to resurface around Christmas morning.
Yes.
Yeah.
Imagine if your daughter was doing that on 4G LTE, Andrew.
Oh, yeah. Woof. Ouch. Yeah, don't do it on your phone.
It'd be quick.
It would be quick.
Wouldn't be 4 hours, but...
It would be quick.
You'd also have to speak to the bank manager.
I wonder if Telstra can get you the little SMS to update so you're getting very close to your limit before it actually exceeds your limit.
But then what are you going to do about it? Because if you turn it off, if you lose patience with this long update and decide to turn the machine off
just auto-resumes.
And battle for another day...
Surely.
Don't. It turns out to brick the machine.
Oh, that's a handy feature.
What happens if you have an internet outage or a power failure or something like that?
Your machine is bricked.
In the 10 hours that it takes you to download that at whatever speed. Yeah, Christmas Day is going to be a shocker, isn't it?
Yep.
Oof.
There's going to be some disappointed kids around.
Well, at least it's worth the wait because you get a nice HDMI high def video on this new device.
So a tip for parents who've gone down this, maybe... Have Christmas early when it comes to the Wii U.
Well, this is the North American release, which was November 18th. We've got our release, the Australian release, is November 30th. So hopefully they'll sneak in an update before then, that before we get our hands on it that might fix
this problem. So that'll mean we'll have to download the 5 gig plus the next update, so it'll probably be 10 gig.
Well, a week after would be better than the day you get it home, I think, anyway. Just at least give us a week.
So once you've got this thing up and running, what can you do with it?
Not a lot.
Oh, really?
Not until – well, you can. But, accessing all your data from the Wii, which is what you would want to do. You know how kids bring their little Miis over from each other's houses?
Yeah,
wanting to put their Mii on their Wii U and all that. You're not going to be able to do that until you do the update. The other thing that's happened is
Your Mii on your Wii.
on your Wiimote. It's so cute, it hurts. Some have already accidentally stumbled upon the debug version of the console as well, according to a NeoGAF user. Yeah, this really surprised me.
Someone put it under the seat of the couch and managed to push the right buttons in the right combination order and came up with the debug screen, really?
Something like that.
Oh, goodness.
According to a NeoGAF post, user Trike was trying to set up his Miiverse friends list after purchasing a Wii U and accidentally came across what happens to be the console's debug menu. He's posted screenshots of it. Looks legit. They show he was able to access a list of admins with options to regenerate admin passwords and delete admin accounts. Whoopsies!
Nice.
According to a follow-up post, he was also able to view messages from developers.
It's not April Fool's, is it?
No, definitely not. It's the middle of November. The user posted photos showing a test screen, which...
we thought Apple Maps was bad.
He tried to sync his Wii U gamepad with the system. It basically points to all things not finished yet, and they tried to get it out for Christmas, and it's not quite finished yet.
All right. So what can I do with it? What games can I play with it? Can any of my other existing games be loaded up on it? Does it?
There's 23 titles available, including Call of Duty Black Ops 2 and Assassin's Creed 3.
Do you have to rebuy, like you do when you go from PS2 on the PlayStation to PS3? Do you have to get a game, or do they do a deal for you?
You would have to rebuy those, I'd imagine.
Oh.
Their new game, but yeah, their new games, those two examples. But yeah, it's the first high definition system.
Super Mario Brothers, the classic Wii game.
You probably have to rebuy that, I would say, but I'm not sure. I haven't looked into it very much.
They're not cheap.
It's a first high definition system, you said, so we've got HDMI. That's great.
No, not quite.
What? What? Nintendo? They had the opportunity here. Are you telling me that they've missed the opportunity?
How can it not have HDMI? What has it got?
I think it's still on component. I'm not 100% sure of that.
No.
I should look that up.
480 or 720?
I say it on the radio. It's 720.
That'll save
Oh, that's got to be good.
Still, the other bad thing is that the Nintendo Network account is tied to your console.
Sounds like a SIM-locked phone. You can only use that SIM on that phone.
Yeah, it turns out the Nintendo Network ID you create for a Wii U will, for now at least, be tied to that console. If you lose that console for whatever reason, or if it breaks...
So all the games you've bought online in their shop is lost in
You lose the ID that went with it. If you buy a second-hand console and you want to import your ID, you can't. If you're at a friend's house and want to sign on using your account, you can't.
Deary me.
Yeah.
This is not...
It's not well thought out, is it?
This is not cricket.
No. Here's the relevant statement from Nintendo support page. Can I log into my Nintendo Network account on a different console? No, you cannot.
Go away. Stop bothering me.
Yeah.
Nintendo... I said good day, sir.
I said good day. A Nintendo Network account can only be used on the console where it was created. They go on to then say, in the future, you'll be able to use your Nintendo Network account with future Nintendo consoles and other devices such as PCs. I don't understand what that means. Do they mean like in the future, in the distant future, when they've got some magical thing that we don't know about yet? Or are they talking about, we're going to fix this, so chill? I don't know which one that sentence is saying. So, currently, the Wii U supports up to 12 individual Nintendo Network IDs per console, which enables each member of the family to have his or own unique identity on the system. But it's stuck
in that system. So you can lose everybody's ID in one go.
So yeah. When your house gets burgled, you really... Not only are they nicking your Wii, they're also taking all that money you put into games.
Yeah, and your leaderboards and your records and your data. And yeah, I suggest you write down your device's serial number. That might count for something one day, but who knows? Who knows?
All right. Now,
disappointing.
Talk to me about television on this thing. Most games these days, games consoles, you can use as media centres, media servers. Can you do that on this?
No.
Really?
Not really, no. No, they haven't really gone that way. The thing about the Wii U is it's got a little controller with a screen on it. So that's the main draw card for it, is that it's a handheld screen, sort of like a tablet controller. So that's what they're going with that. They're trying to...
Okay. Just a little notation in the Sydney Morning Herald here. Nintendo also said the ability to watch Amazon, Hulu and Netflix content on the Wii U won't be available for a few more weeks. So maybe it's coming.
Maybe.
These are separate apps through the content services will be available through the Wii U App Store.
Graham's pointing at the media capabilities of the Nintendo Wii U.
Yeah.
Pointing to Nintendo TV II, which is US only.
TV.
It's US only, so.
Of course it's US only, of course. But you use a proxy server and you can watch Hulu. It's good stuff there.
You can give it a crack. I haven't looked into the Wii U very much because... To be honest, I'm quite underwhelmed.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what you thought of it. Yeah. So that's it. Leave it till next Christmas, if that.
If that, yeah. Yeah. I think everyone's got a Wii, so you'd really, I'd expect them to hear it up a notch a bit better.
Ours
to
was
make
being
everyone replace
used
it.
As I left to come to the radio station tonight. See, it was giving a hammering
from their cold dead hands. You'll prize that Wii, I think.
I think so.
Safety is a big thing in gaming. We all know that. But EB, you should pay
attention
to this.
Spelt with two I's at the end as well. Safety.
Safety.
And trademark.
No, we're switching away from the Wii U now.
Oh, sorry.
Because I find it quite dull. Oh. EB recalls Spartan-branded batteries. This is a recall. If you've gone to EB Games and bought these batteries, you need to take them back or otherwise dispose of
otherwise
them.
They will explode.
You're joking, but
there may
be fire involved.
Maybe.
What sort of batteries, Leah? Are they
Spartan branded? Yeah. So the retailer announced a product recall for third-party battery packs battery packs for use in Xbox 360 and Nintendo Wii controllers.
Right.
Due to a high possibility of fire in the defective units.
Here's a tip for anyone
fire.
Here's a tip for anyone who's using batteries. Don't ever put a battery in a pocket with lots of loose change. It gets very hot. Next.
Oh, my. According to EB's Twitter account, the charging connections in some of the battery packs may have been reversed, leading to a high possibility of fire in case of short circuit. High possibility of fire is just a bit too high for me.
Toyota had a recall during the week too. Maybe it's something in the water over there.
Maybe. The batteries were sold at EB Games stores around Australia between June 2011 and September 2012. The retailer advises anyone who thinks they may have purchased any Spartan branded batteries to immediately stop using them and return the batteries or any products using the batteries to an EB Games store for a full refund. No receipt is required.
Including products using the batteries.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
Must be serious.
Well, fire is kind of serious, Andrew.
Yeah, but if it hasn't gone up in flames and it's still working, and you wouldn't want it to be a Wii U because there goes all your gaming consoles.
Well, it's only high possibility of fire in the case of a short circuit.
Okay.
So you've got to have a short circuit.
So you've got to dispose of it properly.
But you don't want to even go there. Don't even go there. Just take it back. The Australian government,
Government
has pledged $20 million to Australian game development.
Really?
Hmm.
Why?
Which is pretty... What do you mean, why? It's why? Arts funding. Why do we fund any arts?
Okay, arts funding. That's the big black hole that they put money in to make themselves feel good, isn't it?
No, you work in television. You rely on these funds.
We don't get funding. That's why we don't have television in this country anymore. Haven't you noticed? Haven't you watched it lately?
Goodness
no, seriously, me. Why? Are we short? Are they trying to stimulate the gaming in community? Or are they... What's the purpose? Are jobs for people or are they...
Jobs,
we're trying to become competitive in the gaming world because I don't think that's going to be a problem at the moment, judging by what you said tonight.
We are competitive in the gaming world and we'd like to stay that way in the game development world.
How far is $20 million going to go?
Not hugely. That's not a lot of money, but I mean, it's more than what we had before the announcement. So we still don't know. Yeah, it's exactly $20 million more than what we had before. Don't know exactly the form it's going to take.
So whether it'll be
so we don't know if it's a grant or you apply for it or it goes to existing companies.
We don't know whether it's a
startups.
Loan or a grant or a subsidy or a percentage of developmental costs being reimbursed or anything. We don't know any details of what it actually is yet. But I'm of the thought that $20 million bucks is probably pretty good. But I'm reserving my excitement for when I actually know the details of this. I don't know whether it's going to be good for emerging practitioners or good for established studios or who it's going to be good for, but I think $20 million bucks is surely going to be good for someone. Federal Arts Minister Simon Crean made the announcement during the Screen Producers Association of Australia National Conference in Melbourne last week. The pledge will come as part of a newly formed Australian Interactive Games Fund, which will assist local game makers to reclaim their competitive advantage in the overseas market. No further details were provided on who will be eligible, and that's why I'm sort of holding back on my excitement a little bit, or how it would be administered, but the federal government has said it has appointed Screen Australia to draw up the fund's guidelines in consultation with the local game development sector. So it's still in consultation, which is good. It means if you have an idea about how this money should be spent, you can write a letter and someone will read it and they might even think about it. maybe.
Like White Salmon did for us, you can send the Australian government a care package.
Exactly.
So this is for you.
Please give games money.
And please give me $20 million in return. Here's a Tech Talk Radio coffee mug.
Don't they call that extortion?
That might be a bribe. That may be illegal just a little bit.
Well, if you're going to get technical.
The fund will deliver $5 million per annum in 2012-2013, and then we'll jump to $10 million per annum in 2014-2015.
It's good.
So, yeah, we don't know how it's going to be administered yet, but that's worth watching because that's kind of exciting. Steam for Linux beta client has been released.
Ooh.
And Primal's got it.
Has he?
Ooh.
Has he just?
Yeah, if he's in the chat, I don't know if he is.
Things to do in Adelaide.
He was before.
Full Linux support for Steam is one step closer. Valve has announced that it launched a limited access beta for the new Steam for Linux client. The client supports Valve's free-to-play shooter Team Fortress 2, as well as 24 additional games, including World of Goo, Amnesia the Dark Descent, and Trine 2. There were some other good ones there too, but I can't remember them now. On top of that, the Steam for Linux beta client supports Steam's new Big Picture mode, itself in beta, which allows users to browse, purchase, and play all Steam games through TV sets they already own, which is cool.
Is there
cool.
an app that you have to put on it or something, or is it...
I would assume
on the
so.
The big screen, so they'll have to do one for LG and one for Sony and one for...
Oh, no, no, no. I don't know. I think it's...
Or is it a web-based thingy?
I think it's web-based.
Okay.
I've spoken about it before, and now I've gone blank.
Sorry. Mm,
could go on your Raspberry Pi, though.
Nice. That runs Linux.
Yeah. Valve president and co-founder Gabe Newell called the news a huge milestone in the development of PC gaming. Now, the reason he says that is because they hate Windows 8. So they're like, okay, we're going to go with Linux.
So does Microsoft.
Yeah, evidently so. Why else would they do that to it? Oh, goodness. Valve said it received more than 60,000 beta applicants during the first week the company asked for respondents. That's some excitement, I'd say.
That's demand for you.
Yeah. The first wave of Steam for Linux beta participants will be chosen from this group. Oh. But I think they can hand out invitations. I think Primal said something along those lines.
Are you hankering for an invite?
It'll be time to throw your weight around.
Yeah, come on. Come on. What's in it for Primal? A coffee mug?
I don't know, yeah. Maybe if you ask Primal on the chat if he has any invites.
He's asleep at the moment.
He is.
Oh, right. Yeah. Wake up. So, yeah, that should be pretty exciting to watch that. That would be very cool. Speaking of watching things, I've got some news for you. Wreck-It Ralph has topped the box office.
What is Wreck-It Ralph?
That's a movie. Why am I talking about a movie in a game segment?
I don't
know.
Why are you talking about a movie in a game segment?
It's a game-centric animated film.
Oh.
And it was the top performer over the weekend at the box office. The Disney movie earned $49.1 million in sales for the three-day period, according to Hollywood.com. Sales of this caliber boost Wreck-It Ralph past Tangled, which was Walt Disney Animation Studios' previous record holder at $48.8
million. Yep.
Additionally, Wreck-It Ralph's debut is Disney's second number one finish this year, following Brave in June. It nearly doubled what Argo made in the same weekend, which was pretty exciting. Wreck-It Ralph follows the titular Ralph, a villain in a retro Donkey Kong-style arcade game. So it's
throwing barrels.
It's all
I love
about
that.
It's all about games.
I used
this
to
movie.
Love Donkey Kong.
Throwing barrels. That's great, isn't it? Downhill.
After decades of coming out on the losing end, Ralph decides he's fed up with being hated for doing his job and quits.
Well, he leaves the game.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just leave the video game.
Watch. He takes off to explore other game worlds.
What?
Coming across a variety of gaming icons along the way, including Bowser and Dr. Robotnik.
I've seen the trailer for it. It looks pretty good, actually.
Yeah. There's some good funnies in there, too.
This
a lot
sounds
of
really
game,
clever.
Game in jokes.
It
yeah.
Is. Okay. It is. He's had enough of the gamey, and he wants to go and try others.
Okay.
That's very good. Sounds good, anyway.
Wreck-It
good for
Ralph.
Summer movies, I reckon.
Wreck-It Ralph.
Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah. I don't know the actual release date for Australia, but I would assume Boxing Day would be a pretty good bet, wouldn't it?
Probably.
Yeah. A lot of stuff comes out on Boxing Day for us. PlayStation 4 dev kits are shipping to developers.
PlayStation 4.
They haven't got the PS3 right yet. They're moving up in the world.
I know. Maybe they've just banned it and said, all right, let's just start afresh.
Speaking of buying all your titles again for a new platform.
Exactly.
Sony's allegedly conducting briefings on the capabilities of the next PlayStation device. Features and hardware were detailed in these briefings. While Sony's remained silent on the next iteration of its home console, details are beginning to emerge with sources close to VG247 reporting that Sony is beginning to share its plans and specs for the PlayStation 4 with key partners.
Mm. Next Microsoft will have a 720.
The electronics giant is believed to be currently conducting these briefing sessions, which is being referred to only by its code name, Orbis.
Oh.
Orbis.
Good luck with that one, Sony.
See, the Kinect, you need it. The Kinect was called Project Natal before it was Kinect.
Yeah, that's right.
And the Wii was called the Revolution before it was called the Wii. The Orbis.
Okay.
It's PS4.
The next one. Maybe PS4.
But everyone was called PS4 anyway.
Yeah, PS3. Yeah, how long have we had that for? That's been out for a couple of years now, hasn't it?
Yeah, at least 6 or 7 years.
How's it go?
That's my thinking noise.
That was the thinking noise.
That's my thinking noise. Some publishers are believed to be taking delivery of an enhanced version of the console's development kit now, with version 1 understood to have been little more than a graphics card. Good work, guys. The current modified PC update and January's upcoming third refresh is believed to be indicative of the final specs before the units provided next summer.
Oh, so it's a way off.
Well, it's ahead of a predicted pre-E3 reveal.
Summer's not all... So at the moment, it's winter.
It's an American summer, though.
American
yeah.
summer.
Yeah, so it's only 6 months away.
So it's only 6 months away. Yeah. That's not all that far.
No, well, they would want something to display at E3.
Yeah, of course.
So, yeah. Sources went on to disclose that the console will be powered by AMD's A10 APU, a combination CPU and GPU single chip, with dev kits featuring either 8 gig or 16 gig of RAM.
Whew. Cool. Yep.
Warlock says Crikey. PlayStation 3, November 11, 2006.
There you go. There you go. A Blu-ray optical drive.
6 years.
And a 256 gig hard disk drive. Ethernet, HDMI and Wi-Fi functionality are all believed to be making the jump from the PS3 to its successor, which is good news. Yeah. I cannot do without those things.
They're very funny in our chat at the moment.
Nintendo, hello.
Yeah, pay attention.
Ethernet, HDMI, Wi-Fi.
Blu-ray, yeah. Blu-ray. Microsoft, pay attention. Blu-ray. You can't not have one now. Sony is also reported to be briefing developers on some of the iterations for the device with suggestions that the user interface on the next PlayStation will be overhauled. Oh, thank God. And that activating the PS button on the controller mid-game will allow users to explore any part of the system, including the PlayStation Store to buy DLC, without the need to leave the active session. It's only taken you since 2006. Well done. No pricing details are known. Tipsters confirm that Sony's approach with its next console is to offer something very affordable that isn't a slouch. Ooh.
That isn't a slouch.
That isn't a slouch. Okay. Is that a dig at Nintendo's latest release?
Yeah.
Ooh. But yeah, that's something to watch. That's the first time we've heard about
the PS4. We all knew it was on the horizon.
We did. We saw it coming, but we didn't know anything about it.
It's like the iPhone 6. Have we spoken about that yet?
No.
Good.
You need to at least give me a month.
Oh, who's texting me?
Adam's View will be on it next week.
Yeah. And he'll have all the answers to what's going to be in it.
Excellent.
All of them. Yeah, so the PS4 is on its way, called Orbis.
Orbis.
O-R-B-I-S.
I-S. Okay.
That's pretty cool. So I had a lot to cover this week.
You did. You haven't been here for a while, so good half hour.
I tried to speak like fast.
Yeah.
So get over and done with quickly.
Yeah. You've been playing Journey lately?
I have.
Graham?
No, oddly enough.
The artsy downloadable game Journey leads the pack of nominees this year in the Spike Video Game Awards.
Yay!
Excellent.
I hope it wins them all.
The PS3 game received several nods in such categories as Best Graphics, Independent Game, Original Score and Game of the Year, and Frustrating Gameplay on behalf of Graham Callaghan. He's still in a desert somewhere looking for a ride or something. Where did you get left in the desert or something, wasn't it?
Oh, I kept getting blown back into the little hole when I went the wrong way.
Oh, the dear.
Big wind comes up and blows you back.
Still a
slow learner.
Yeah. Other games.
Don't go there if the game doesn't want you to go there.
Other game nominees this year, Assassin's Creed 3, Dishonor, Mass Effect 3, and The Walking Dead, the game.
Mm.
Is that like zombies versus plants?
No, it's just zombies versus people.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, The Walking Dead was...
good one for the kiddies?
Was, no, definitely not. Walking Dead is comics and it started out as comics and it's also a TV show. And it's a game now as well by Telltale.
The nominations for the best shooter category. This will interest you, Dr. Ron. Yes. Badlands 2.
Yep.
Call of Duty, Black Ops 2.
Yeah.
Halo 4.
Yeah.
And Max Payne 3.
Okay.
Yeah, if you're into that. Meh?
Meh.
Okay. The 10th annual ceremony on December the 7th will be hosted by the one and only Cheese Royale, Samuel L. Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
That was a great scene, wasn't it?
Royale with cheese.
That's it, yep. Yep. I get it right. And be broadcast live on Spike. There you go.
Cool.
So some computer games awards.
Have you played Journey?
No, I took Graham's advice.
Oh, did you?
don't take my advice on games.
Graham's advice.
On a game?
After I've talked to the producer in Fed Square of the game, you take Graham's advice.
Yeah, you're tarnished.
I loved the game before I met her, made the record show.
All right. The record shows that.
No, free, download.
I will give it a go in after December the 3rd.
The first sort of chapter is free and then you get to a certain point. And if you want to continue, you can pay a little bit of...
Graham obviously hasn't got to...
If you get to that point, yeah. So you're getting... What you're saying, Graham, is you're getting excellent value for money.
Mm. Yes, I am. Yes, I've had hours of frustration for no cost whatsoever.
Good. That's the way to look at it.
I would say that falls under user error myself.
Ah.
Perhaps plebcac.
User failure.
Say that again.
Was it?
Pebcac.
Pebcac.
Yeah, problem exists between chair and keyboard.
Yes.
Yeah, or chair and
that's
control.
That's a good acronym
in this case.
Pebcac.
Pebcac.
Yeah, that's probably fair. Yeah, my heart probably wasn't in it when I was playing it.
Well, that's the problem because it's a feels game. So your heart has to be in it.
I don't do feelings. I'm a bloke. What's the matter with you?
Men have feelings. You're sexist.
I'm sexist against men.
Yes. Right. You said a lot of feelings.
Support men's health.
How's your Mo going, by
Thank
the way?
You very much.
How's your Mo, bro?
Nice segue. Yeah, it's going okay. Mobro.co/GCTTR. And look at it. The first thing Lena said to me was how well it was going.
Mm.
Dr. Ron didn't.
No, Dr. Ron, yeah.
He looks like he's from Monty Python.
Oh, dear. I'm not sure that's a good thing.
Well, you know, it could be worse. Could be worse. No, you've got a good tuft there
good
at the moment.
Tuft.
A good tuft.
We'll have to. I'll have to get a tuft. I'll have to get a photo and put it up on the site.
Do that.
Yeah. An update.
Remember how we used to do the Manic Minute, Dr. Ron?
Ah, yes.
Yeah, well, I'm going to gloss over a lot of headlines now, which we should have been speaking about probably an hour ago.
Go ahead. We'll do your best to confuse, obfuscate, and interrupt.
I'll just throw them out there and feel free to jump in at any particular point in time. Vodafone Hutchison Australia continues to lose customers and money despite heavy investment in its new network.
Yawn, move on.
Ooh. Yawn, move on? Ooh. Oh, okay.
Oh, sorry.
Ooh. Domestic customer numbers also continue to fall down from 3.2. Why? It's relevant because they're all coming to Telstra. Haven't you noticed your broadband gets slower except
on
4LTE? Yeah. continuing to fall down from 3.2 million in July 2012 to a mere 3.17 million in September 2012. So not that much, I wouldn't have thought. But nonetheless, it's still a slide in the wrong direction for poor old Vodafone. Mm. What do they have to do? Like, remember the VodaFail website we had the guy on the show?
They've got a big reputation problem, haven't they? So they've just got a lot of hard work to do, I'm afraid.
Yeah. All right. Good luck with that, Vodafone. .com. You know him, the person who you don't want to... Yeah, that's the reaction I wanted. He's moved to New Zealand now.
He's been in New Zealand for a long while.
Yeah, but a little African country said, no, go away, don't bother us. And he's popped up with mega.co.nz to run his cloud.
Oh, he's moved his domain. Yeah. He's chosen a New Zealand domain.
Yeah, because...
How patriotic of him.
.ga said no.
Yes.
Go away. So he went to New Zealand. And the Kiwi said, yes, come here, we'll have you.
Yes.
They probably don't know what they've got yet. Anyway... MegaUpload.com, continuing his efforts to resurrect file storage and fly in the face of authorities globally, as you do.
Mm.
Microsoft sells 4 million Windows 8 upgrades.
Okay.
And the boss of Windows 8 and Mr. Stephen Sinofsky...
Was sacked.
He was sacked, was he?
Yep.
Oh, why? Did they say why?
No, they just said it was a mutual decision and that everyone was happy and would stay playing.
It was hard to work
nicely.
With or something.
And is that code for sacked, is it?
It is.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah. And he's moved on to greener pastures.
What, Google?
No, not to Google. Don't know where he's moved on to.
He's just Did he get a golden handshake of several lots of handfuls of money and gold watches and stuff?
Several lots of millions.
Yeah. So.
Well, look, he was involved in the launch of Windows 8 and worked tirelessly on Windows 7 as well. He was instrumental in the success of Windows 7. He's been at Microsoft for a long time. And he's suddenly, there was a very terse press release from Microsoft that said,
should we read
being
something
replaced.
Into this? Should we put on our conspiracy hats?
Oh, I don't know. There's a conspiracy. It's probably just a
timely
a conflict
maybe?
Of opinions.
Have you seen the new ads on the television for Microsoft Surfers?
Yeah, I have.
Lots of people
sort
throwing synchronized tablets around, synchronized surfaces around.
Yeah, I like that new Apple ad. It's awesome. Oh, wait. Oh,
yeah.
Surface.
Hang on a minute.
Sorry.
We're all individuals.
Yes, yes. We're all individuals.
Someone's supposed to say, I'm not.
I'm not.
No, thank you. yes, so there's a bit of news on Microsoft, the new Surface tablet. Moderate start, they said, or modest start because of limited availability. Are they taking a leaf out of the Apple book there too, are they? Good luck in getting any iPhone 5s or iPad minis in the short term. Yeah, it's one of those things, really, isn't it?
You've got one. You've got two. You've got an iPad mini and an iPhone 5.
I'm collecting them over here. They're breeding. Like rabbits. Like rabbits.
Kool-Aid.
Kool-Aid.
Yeah. I've bought another
Everyone's
Apple.
Everyone's told me off for saying Kool-Aid.
Yeah, I can say it.
Yeah.
You can't.
I got another Apple device the other day, but I can't
those
say it on radio.
Situations. I see. I understand.
I'm listening.
After the show.
Really?
Okay. And you're throwing Apple more money.
You now have more Apple products in your house than
I
have.
No,
we're nearly at equilibrium in the household with PC and Apple.
And that's quite significant if you know Andrew and his family and his house and how many PCs and servers he's got.
I'm moving on to Linux next.
Really? I've been hearing
that
for a number of years.
Exactly, Graham.
dear, yes, just another one. All right, so we've covered off that, haven't we?
Got to catch them all, like Pokemon.
Do you remember about 12 months ago we talked about Google's new fiber network that was going to roll out through the United States free of charge?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Now, they finally turned it on during the course of the week. If you live in Kansas, you're the lucky people. You now have access to Google's fiber network. And apparently, they call it a fiberhood because everyone needs a word. You need to be able to pigeonhole a product.
Right.
So you join the fiberhood nowadays.
Oh, cute.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
Cute.
And Google Fiber will also connect the Kansas City Startup Village Community Project, as well as entrepreneurial areas such as, guess one, where's an entrepreneurial area? She's just moved out of it.
In Kansas?
No, in the United States. Palo Alto?
Oh, yeah, Palo Alto.
Where all the people that
Silicon
need,
Valley?
Yeah, all that sort of stuff.
Yep.
Lyd used to live there. She's moved to a lovely another spot now. Not in the United States. She's back.
Yay!
And, of course, where else would you put such a device like this where people spend lots of money? In Las Vegas and the Boulder area.
Oh. Yeah,
so that's there too. 180 neighborhoods in Kansas, around about 460,000 people in the city itself. Just over 2 million in the entire metro area will be able to connect to Google Fiber. Nice.
Cool. How fast is that down?
Plenty. I did have it here. It's 5 megs. It's...
Five's not impressive.
No. That was, I think, the as part of the Google. Google offers free service, which it says today is average speeds of 5 megs down and 1 meg uploads with no data caps. So, yeah, it's not that fast.
Ooh.
But for free.
But
that's
for free.
Faster than
free,
what I get good. On my ADSL 2 Plus at home, which I pay a lot of money for.
Wow. Yeah, actually, yeah.
It's twice the speed of what I get at home.
Oh, yeah, I was on 2 at the old place. Yeah.
So if Google was running fiber past my house and said, here, double your internet speed and PS, it's free. I'd be saying, yep, sign me up.
Sounds good.
All right, another news. Google hands over user data because they can.
Who did they hand it to?
That's a very good question. The Australian government requested or put in 334 requests.
Yep.
That's from agencies, courts and the likes to hand over data. And it did in 6 months to June this year. So Google's trying to be open and transparent when it comes to people doing... things or, that they may not be
or
should be doing.
Or just being forced to comply with the law where work.
That too.
Where they trade.
Yeah. The web giant's transparency report statistics shows that it received 523 user requests for the period and complied with 64% of them. The requests related to 841 specific users or accounts. So they've obviously been targeting people. And some they said yes and some they said no.
Wonder how they decided which 64% to comply with.
Depends which political electorate you probably lived in. I don't know.
Might have to do some further reading on that one.
PayPal. Who uses PayPal?
Everyone uses PayPal.
PayPal's going in store.
PayPal.
In taxis.
They're going what?
PayPal's going in stores and in taxis. They're joining up with the FPOS system. You will be able to use your PayPal device in store via an app very shortly throughout Australia and other participating retailers.
Cool. Can they get it to work properly first?
I don't know.
That'd be awesome.
Give it a whirl. What, yours doesn't work properly? I've never had a problem with it. What have you been buying on it that you shouldn't be?
No, nothing. But I've recently finished a job where they want to pay me through PayPal. So I have to make an account because I haven't used my old one for years or something. Yeah, I'm going to make a new one. Because I've got $7 in the old one and I can't get it out.
$7.
Is there a way when you ride in a taxi that you can actually pay the amount on the meter? Like if it says $64.12, you turn around and they say, that'll be $71.15.
Yeah.
And you go, but what? That's not what the meter says. It doesn't matter whether it's credit card or cash or Bitcoin or Linden dollars. It's always like an arbitrary 10 to 15 to 18.95 more than what the meter says. And they go, oh, yeah, but we did a toll and we turned left at that other street and then there's a Wednesday surcharge. And
next week's gadget of the week might shed some light onto it. See, we plan ahead on this show.
You and I planned ahead today. It doesn't happen for, it's taken us 8 years, but we finally got there.
We've
worked out a good formula.
So that's something worth having a chat about. Dodo, the bird, the dead bird.
It's extinct.
Yeah, that's the one. Yep.
Internet with flies.
No, it's internet. Internet. Those internet that flies.
That flied.
With
post.
Flies hanging around.
Yeah.
Microsoft has teamed up with Dodo. I don't know whether that's a good choice, but nonetheless.
It's a good choice for Dodo, possibly.
Yeah, probably. To offer an Xbox bundled with unlimited broadband in metro and regional areas. According to a Dodo spokesperson, the bundle costs $60 a month for ADSL 2+ in the metro area. But customers in regional areas must connect themselves with regular DSL as well as a plan costing $10 more than the city dwellers to access. 24-month bundle plan, Xbox Live Gold, all that sort of stuff, allowing online game playing and access to other services.
Mm, obviously, they saw how well it was working out for Nokia.
So I guess that means if you buy DLC, does it come up on your internet bill instead of... I don't know. I'll have to look into that.
I don't know anyone who uses Dodo, to be quite honest, so I can't even check that out.
No.
All right. Finally, Google is going to cop a bit of a fine. And the reason why I'm talking about it, because...
More Google news.
These people cop fines on a regular basis. But because of a privacy breach, remember the Safari issue that they had a while back? With Safari users and cookies and stuff like that, yeah. Not going into detail, the story's more about the actual fine. It's the biggest fine ever imposed upon a telco/ISP type sort of body, which is $22.5 million. So, which is a bit of a, for Google and those sort of people, probably just a bit of flesh wound. But nonetheless, it's still a very high penalty. And a US district judge told lawyers and a court hearing in San Francisco that she's likely to approve the fine. So that's...
because the jury comes up with what it thinks is a suitable penalty.
That's the American system, isn't it?
The American system, and then the judge says that's proportionate. That's fair enough that you can pay that fine.
Or possibly not.
Or not. Interesting.
And in other interesting news, which I thought was rather... strange. We're not going to promote news or nasty things, but there's a bit of a skirmish happening in Middle Eastern countries at the moment with certain, you know, tyrannies of people throwing bombs at each other. Anonymous has attacked Israeli government sites with a DDoS attack, just to add all the other sort of things that they're dealing with at the moment over there.
That'll ease any issues.
Yeah, that'll help, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's as if they haven't got enough to deal with over there that Anonymous has decided to block the... do whatever they do. The hacking collective... Anonymous has joined forces with the other side and has attacked several Israeli government sites. The press release posted on Anonymous's affiliated website deplores what the hacking group says is barbaric and brutal and despicable treatment of Palestinian people. Anyway, that's news. Just thought we'd just throw that in. But it's come to cyber space, which I think is probably the first time. We've seen DDoS attacks and political issues from time to time come up globally. But this, I think, is the first of its kind, don't you think? We haven't seen organisations like this go to that sort of level
They do a fair amount of anti-American stuff. Yeah. The Israelis have a interesting reputation when it comes to their cyber security forces, if that's a good way to say that.
Yes. Anyway, we should probably should leave it there.
We're a tech
program after all. There's a couple of other interesting things floating around at the moment. Online rants on Facebook and Twitter are getting users into legal troubles here in Australia. Teenagers in particular, because they go off and shoot their mouse off, not realising what they say. And the next thing you know, that certain pieces of paper rock up on the doorstep saying cease and desist, or come and talk to a particular person in a law enforcement establishment, i.e. a court or something like that. So
they think it's texting their friends instead of publishing.
Yes.
Rookie mistake.
A rookie mistake. So, parents, be wary. You've got to be responsible what your kids are doing. Make sure you can sit down and see what they're doing on Facebook and Twitter and those sort of things.
Good luck.
Good luck. But you should hopefully have a good relationship with your kids. Isn't that the way it works, Lena?
Yeah, but a good relationship with your kids doesn't mean they don't have any privacy.
Are you a friend with your mum on Facebook?
Yes, on one of my Facebooks. No, I want to keep family and work separate, so I
do
have
you?
To.
Isn't that against Facebook's policy to have more than one account?
It is.
Yeah, I've got more than one account too.
If they kick me off for it, then I'm not going back. So
are you telling me that having a third of the world's population on Facebook is not really true?
No, it's about a sixth of the world's
population. Yeah, because everyone's got two accounts.
At least.
Yes. The way I see it, they're showing me two different kinds of ads, so what are they whinging about?
Oh, yeah.
What's their problem? Why do they want me to have one?
Well, glad we covered that. That was a bit of the manic minute, glossed over very briefly, but now you've got a bit of a feel about what's going on in the world this week.
Yeah.
The Oddspot Gadget Tech, what else do we do? Oddspot Gadget
application?
Website? Application?
That's
Have we covered them all off now?
I think you've done them all.
Okay, after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Telstra is the only carrier that can do location-based early warning.
Yes, make a sweeping generalisation.
By here.
Absolutely.
Oh, please tell me they printed the CCV as well.
Yeah.
The tile change to offer you updates at a glance.
You sound like a climate change skeptic. What did you think I was going to say?
Who knows?
Time is an illusion.
Lunchtime, doubly so.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! Oh, this thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my hole!
Scarecrows are a tried and true piece of human technology, but birds nowadays harass more than just crops, they also bother planes in the sky. That's why our gadget this week is the Scarecrow Laser Tank. It's been developed by South Korea. A new gadget for its airports, an unmanned tank with laser and acoustic weapons.
What does it do? It takes out what?
Birds.
Literally.
Literally.
What?
A popular gadget blog Gizmodo says the Korean Atomic Energy Group and a subsidiary of LG have been working together on the project for years. Now the actual bird-scaring unmanned ground vehicles are rolling out to select Korean airports.
So what do they do? Sit at the end of the runway and take pot shots at things that fly past?
And they take out birds with lasers.
What happens if they mistake it for a plane?
Well, I hope they've thought about that. There's probably a high likelihood of that happening at airports. The tank is 2.4 metres long. It weighs 1 ton. It's fitted with cameras to track birds in daylight and at night. It has acoustic sensors, directional acoustic transmission hardware, and green lasers, all designed to harass birds with 100 decibel popping noises and frenetic laser patterns.
What?
While unmanned, the vehicles are monitored and piloted from remote control stations, although they can avoid obstacles.
Now, hang on. This is protecting an airport.
Yeah.
Can you tell me what airports I don't want to fly into?
Anything in South Korea.
But
I need one of these. I'm being stalked by a crow.
Yeah. If the birds...
On your bike helmet, yeah.
On if my the, balcony.
If the birds aren't afraid of a 747 taking off, how are they going to be afraid of a popping noise from a little tank?
Because it's got green lasers.
What does it do? Shoot it in its eye and blinds it. So
I'd be scared
crashes
of green
and burns.
Lasers. I would be scared.
The designers of the tank claim it's 20% more efficient than other solutions. Gizmodo says it's certainly at least 20% cooler.
And it would look pretty good as you're flying in a hazy day, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It'd be like in Star Wars.
An unmanned tank driving around firing green lasers in the air. I reckon that's pretty cool. That was a great gadget. It's not a gadget that you or I could go and buy, but
No, yeah. You get arrested in this country with a gadget like that.
Yeah, wouldn't you? Flying to South Korea, keep your eyes and ears open. That's our gadget.
And your head down.
The Scarecrow Laser Tank.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Cheerio.
Cheerio.
ch.err.io. It's a notification service for the new social network, app.net.
Cheerio. Is it? I should pay attention to this then, rather than make fun of it. What is it?
App.net is currently in its alpha development stage. It doesn't have push notifications just yet, like Twitter does.
Yeah.
But if you're an app.net user and you want to be notified of a mention or a post or a repost, have a look at Cheerio, ch.err.io. This is a third-party push notification service for app.net. You give permission for Cheerio to access your account, and tell it where you want notifications sent, what app you want launched when you tap the notification.
How's app.net going?
It's going really well. I'm really enjoying it. I'm finding it's going nice, isn't it? First, and then I'm cross-posting stuff onto Twitter if I want to. It's a good little community.
It is.
Great
little
community.
You have to pay to join up.
You do.
It's not for anyone.
Well, depends. Depends how much you're prepared to pay. I think I paid an annual subscription.
I did too, on your say-so, and it wasn't much. Nice.
It's a good little community.
And this lets you do push notifications to the device of your choice.
Notifications using the third-party API. So have a look. If you're an app.net user and you want push notifications, the website, ch.err.io. Cheerio. Woohoo!
Tech Talk Radio, app of the week.
This week's application, Andrew, is called Tagtown. I experienced Tagtown personally, yes, at the Breath of Fresh Air Film Festival in Launceston, Tasmania. At Bofa. Tagtown's like a combination of geocaching and smartphone technology. What do you have to do with Tagtown?
My brain's trying to work this
one out. Yeah, I know. It's
geocaching is finding things with,
secret
GPSs
maps
and stuff.
And
yeah.
Hidden treasure.
And what?
And smartphones.
Okay, so...
Like fox hunting, but without radios.
It's like fox hunting without radios, but with smartphones.
Fox hunting? What's fox hunting?
The radio one, not the brutality one.
Oh, I thought it was the brutality one. Go club a few foxes today.
No,
with Tagtown, you have to find landmarks, and you check in with the Tagtown app to say you found them. And you do this
There's a QR code on it or something?
No, it's very clever. What you do is it superimposes a library image that's on your screen with what you're actually looking at in real life. So if there's a picture
in front
of a statue... You hold your iPhone up to that statue. You line it up with the image.
And you take a photo.
And you say, there, I've tagged. I've found what I'm supposed to
be
looking
for. And where does the tag go? Like, does it...
Well, it goes into your Tagtown, into the program that you're running or the course that you're doing. The aim's to discover new places, unlock achievements, stories, prizes, and then you get discount vouchers from, like, participating vendors.
Okay. So who's had too much time to set this up?
A company called ModProds.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, they've
done
an good.
Excellent job. So
keep
you can
the kiddies
also,
entertained over summer.
Absolutely. You can create your own quests to share with a wider audience if you want to.
There's a massive community behind it too.
There is.
Geocaching's been around for ages. Mark Diggins is a regular. He does it. He did it in the States.
Yeah, absolutely. Warlock in our chat room, he's a geocacher from way back. So Tagtown will be available as a free download later
this
year.
What platforms?
iGadget only at this stage, but Android will be coming soon. It's been developed wholly in Australia. For more information, visit the Mod Productions website, which is at modprods.com. Our application, Andrew, Tagtown.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
Ma, the meatloaf!
Bon. James Bond.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
The Taliban has been left red-faced after...
I heard this on the news tonight.
After accidentally revealing the email addresses of everyone on its mailing list.
Whoops.
According to America's ABC News, official Taliban spokesperson Qari Yusuf Ahmadi publicly CC'd the names in an email.
Is he still with us?
Well, he hasn't responded to requests for comments, so maybe not.
No.
He was forwarding a press release received from the account of another Taliban spokesperson when the blunder occurred. Instead of using the BCC function, Ahmadi made the addresses of more than 400 members public. A journalist, Mustafa Kazemi, tweeted, "The Taliban have just included all four of my email addresses on a leaked distribution list," adding it was quite reassuring to his safety. Somewhat ironically, I think. Most of the people on the Taliban mailing list are journalists, but the names of an Afghan legislator, a local governor, several academic activists, and an Afghan warlord also appear on the list. That's our odd spot.
How could they tell that? Was it a .gov.whatever Afghan, whatever the country domain is for that? That'd be interesting. Whoops.
All right. Yes. Old problem. A lot of people don't realise that when you CC that everybody gets to see everybody else's email address, if you're sending stuff to a list like that, it's very important to always use BCC, because otherwise you get in trouble with privacy regulations.
Graham's advising the
people
Taliban.
Will get upset. I'm not advising the Taliban. I'm advising everybody else not to make the same mistake, because I've seen it happen too often. So it's not just the Taliban that makes
this
mistake.
Yeah, and then your email gets out to people who don't want to have it, and it's very annoying. You have to go and change your email address.
Yep, and it goes to people who haven't got any security on their machines and ends up on the spam lists and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, it's very, very annoying when your email address gets out when you don't intend it to.
Mm. Don't forget, there are only 2 TikTok radios left now in the entire world.
Only 2?
Only 2 left.
In the current series.
Register for final Tech Talks. Go to techtalkradio.eventzilla.net.
Oh, well done. You remembered what it was, which is more than I did last week.
Oh. If you want to come and join us for Christmas drinks.
5 left or something, isn't it? You keep tweeting.
techtalksocial.eventzilla.net. Make sure you subscribe to the email newsletter. Go to our website. Click on subs and what's on newsletter, and you'll get all the details and links there.
That's very important, because that's when you'll hear if we're doing a special show or anything like that.
And we promise not to CC you on any emails. Isn't that right, Dr.
That's
Ron?
That's correct. Yeah. That will not happen, he says, touching the wooden desk in front of him.
That is Tech Talk Radio for the third last show for the evening. Thank you, Linesman. Thank you, Ball
what
Boys.
Show is it?
The anti-penultimate.
Well done.
Ah.
Yeah, I knew I'd get it by the end of the show.
Excellent work.
Yay. It's the show before the penultimate show.
Don't print it so big next time and I can focus on it. Anyway, yes, do what Dr. Ron said. And until next week, thanks for listening. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the 2-hour version or access the 1-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03-8682-9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. Don't forget, you can follow the panellists on Twitter, join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat, and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.